Hi and welcome to The Unschooled Space, the podcast that's here to help parents embrace their personal journey into unschooling with all the joy and challenges it's likely to bring. Each episode I look at different aspects of unschooling and talk with other parents about their experiences. This is episode 53 and I'm your host, Esther Jones. And don't forget to check out my website, which is esther-jones.com, and subscribe to my newsletter for all things deschooling and mindful parenting. And my January Mindful Parenting course is open for registration now. This course is particularly suitable for unschooling parents, parents of neurodivergent children, and anyone engaged in their own deschooling journey. So my guest today is Claire Gillespie from Hertfordshire in the UK. Claire lives with her husband and two sons, who are 15 and 13. And they've been unschooling now for 4 years after their oldest son asked to leave school. Amongst other things, we talk about the fascinating journeys that children embark on when they're in charge of their own learning, how different we all are from each other, and the inevitable ebb and flow of the days. And Claire shares how this way of living has impacted her and the choices that she makes in her own life. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi Claire, thank you so much for your time today. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
Well, maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about your family and about your journey to unschooling.
Okay, so I'm Claire. I'm married and I've got two boys. One is now 15 and the other one's 13. And they both went to school, did the normal journey. And then I took my eldest boy out when it was January 2020, so he'd done the first term of secondary school. I'd never really liked school. So from day one, school had immediately said, oh, he's very sensitive. And when he was there, he was fine. But home life was hard. I think just keeping it very together during the school day meant that we had big outbursts at home afterwards, and I just had this feeling of just, is this it? Like, does it have to be like this? This just seems rubbish. Like, I get the scraps at the end of the day, and this very, you know, volatile emotional child that's just exhausted. And yeah, so his journey through school had never been brilliant, I suppose. And we had tried three very different schools to see if we could find a fit somewhere. And then my younger one, who's now 13, he'd always been okay in school. But I think the way I look at it now is I think okay is not good enough. He was never thriving in school. He was always just went to school and it was all a bit meh. So yeah, so, you know, roll on now, we are thriving. And I really like that word that, you know, we are. I can see them every day following their interests, and us as a family have completely changed our lives, really. And we know what we want. And yeah, just feel like life is there for the taking, and we embrace it now. Whereas before, I just felt we were very stuck in a system that didn't really have any flexibility or, yeah.
Yeah. And like we're just saying there about the word thriving, is it enough to just be okay at school? Is that all we can aspire to ask ourselves that question? How do our children thrive?
Yeah, I think the words that like how to cope with school, how to gain resilience, you know, how to get by, you know, all this kind of language. And I think, really?
Yeah, we wouldn't use it with adults, would we? If, you know, if I was talking to a friend, they told me about a terrible job and I encouraged them to just try and cope and get through and be more resilient, I'd probably suggest they change their job.
Yeah. Where's the compassion? Where's the empathy? Where's the actually is a person who is finding this hard, you know, and they're being honest enough to say, you know, obviously when the boys were very little, they can't articulate that in a way of this is how I feel. So it becomes out in, you know, in behaviours and things. And you know, I understand a lot more about that now because I've read up on it and I've done a lot of learning myself. But they're telling you something. They're trying to send you a message of like, I'm not okay with this. This doesn't fit with like our need to be our need for autonomy. And just, we are all individual people. And, you know, my young, eldest particularly needs to move. Like, movement is a big part of his life. He's, you know, I remember friends when he's my firstborn, so when he was little, and their toddlers would all walk along, you know, holding their hand, and he would always be miles ahead of me, and I'd be that mum screaming, watch the road. And, you know, he never walked, he had to run, and he does that now. And I can see now that he goes for a run every day, he does a gym workout every day. You know, he has to move, and in order to learn, in a way. So I just can't imagine what it was like for him to sit still in a classroom. Like, that must have just been so hard, because that's not who he is as a person.
Yeah, and to be in that place of tension within a classroom, it makes no sense when we're in a kind of a fight or flight, you know, just coping. We're not really open to learning. And I'm sure you've seen this in your home, that when everyone's relaxed and calm and happy, and there's just this really supportive feeling about the home, everyone is open-minded. We're all much more expansive, aren't we? Because we're relaxed, that growth place, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I used to, you know, we all have worries. And I suppose my biggest worry back before I took the boys out of school was, you know, if they haven't, that word cope again, if they haven't been able to cope with this, you know, gosh, well, how are they going to cope when they're older? Or, you know, is this always going to be there? But it just hasn't been the case at all, because once we kind of removed that, almost the thing that was causing a lot of, you know, the fight and flight, it's just the anxiety, the level of fear that was there, not wanting to get into trouble, not wanting to get anything wrong, really, just very much looking out for the danger. And I think once we sort of removed that, what I've seen is that with time and being able to trust and then being able to relax, I've seen both the boys do incredible things that are really, really hard that I kind of never thought they'd do. But, you know, they blow my mind all the time. And I'm like, oh, wow, I never, oh my God, you've just done that.
Yeah. Do you know, we were talking just a moment before we started recording about the podcast with Donna, and she was talking about that place of possibility that you can enter when you let go of how things should be. And I'm often reminded of that, Claire, when I see my children do things and I think, wow, that possibility was always in there. Not sure I'd have seen that when they were, you know, 10 years ago. I'm not sure I would have believed in that possibility. Yeah. So to give space for all the possibility to happen, it's really huge. Yeah, just going back to something you said about that idea of, yeah, but if they can't cope with that, how will they be resilient enough? Yeah. How will they cope with the real world? And I'm using inverted commas there. Because, in fact, I think that while they're children and they are in a safe environment, within a safe environment, that is where they learn their coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Your voice, advocating for yourself, letting people know about your needs, your boundaries, all of that can really only be developed within a safe environment.
I totally agree.
Family's real world, you know, out and about in town during the day. It's all real life. They're in real life all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And my two boys, I learned very quickly once they came out of school that it had to be real world learning for them. Like, they can sniff out a project, a pretend project. They've got that radar and they look at me and they're like, I don't want to do that. It's pretend.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know, but come on, you know. They're like, no, I want to build a zoo. I know, but we can't build a zoo, so let's pretend to build a zoo. Like, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, we come back to that idea that everything has to have meaning. Children also look for meaning. They're no different from older versions of themselves, you know, like, we want meaning from when we're young. We want life to have purpose, and have to be careful not to take that away in order to, in our minds, create a purposeful adult. You've got to allow them to have purpose and meaning when they're younger, and to look for that.
Yeah, and I think they want to be taken seriously as well. You know, I mean, obviously they are a young people. You know, you don't treat them as adults, but I think we, as a family, see ourselves much more now as a team of equals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has changed the family dynamic for the better, I think. You know, I don't believe in that kind of power over you know, I think it's important that they do have a voice and that they are listened to and they are taken seriously. And I think, you know, going back to when they were at school, I think that's probably what my eldest, amongst other things, found the hardest, is that actually you aren't listened to. And actually your voice, although they would say it matters, he never felt it did. And so when you are then saying, I don't agree with this, or, you know, or asking, or, you know, questioning, why do we do that? Or I don't believe that that way. And, you know, that was shut down very quickly, no matter what school we went to, that sort of curiosity or that questioning. And I think he found, okay, ask the question, but we're going to do it this way because this is how we do it. And I think he finds that very frustrating.
Yeah, I think probably we all do. And some of us more than others. So I think when we look at our children, there are children who will go, okay, right, well, that's fine, and put up with it. And they may even look like they are thriving. Potentially, they could probably thrive more. And then there are the children who absolutely, that's a massive threat to their autonomy. And those are the ones who will do anything to sort of get that autonomy back, or shut down, or, you know, through no fault of their own. This is simply who they are in an environment that doesn't really get that. So tell us a little bit what thriving looks like in your family now. And
I think, yeah, autonomy is huge, but I just think being able to just be yourself and really follow what you're interested in. I mean, it's just beautiful to watch. And my two, I would say they're chalk and cheese. They're completely different individuals. And so it is very bespoke to them. It'd be nearly 4 years now since they came out of school. And, you know, now I feel in a much stronger position about how I can support them on their journey, much more as a coach and facilitator and they lead. You know, when we started, I was much more kind of, gosh, you know, how do I get this right? What are we doing? It's all a very frightening place. So, you know, it didn't just happen overnight. We've very much kind of relaxed into it. And I think for me, that was about me stepping back, I think, and giving them time and space to step forward.
Well, how did you find that stepping back for you? Did you feel the worries there?
It's been a journey. Yeah, I'm probably quite, yeah, in the early days, I quite like to get things right. You know, I like to sort of be in control. I'm probably a bit of a leader, you know, that those kind of traits. So I've had to do a lot of work on myself, actually. And that's what I've kind of loved about this, is that as a family, and, you know, my husband's been involved, we've all had to kind of really unpick lots of beliefs that we've had and lots of that societal views, and really kind of work on ourselves and what we want for the future. And then, you know, working towards how you're going to get there. So I think, how does thriving look for the boys was the question. I can just really see that they are their own people. And I think when I look back to my schooling, and this is probably why I've probably felt a little bit like I've fallen apart and I've had to build myself back up again in my, you know, mid-40s, is because I think I probably had to hide a lot of my authentic self when I was little. So I found school okay, but I think I went the opposite and was just incredibly good because I didn't want to get in trouble. So I kind of quietened myself down and just did a really good job on everything. And I think that almost dampened my spirit a little bit. And I suppose where I see the boys are at now is that I don't see them dampening that spirit. Like, they just seem completely alive, and there's no apologizing for what they want to do or what they absolutely love and how they spend their time. And yeah, and I really admire that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. They are their own people. Yes. I often have that thought about these three people here. They are their own people. They really are. And yeah, similar actually from my school experience, that being very, very good, don't want to get anything wrong, mustn't get things wrong. And of course, within that, there's this huge looking for approval, isn't there? This sort of worry about what other people think. That was a huge one for me to unpick. And I think with unschooling, I mean, I can't believe there's any parent out there who doesn't go through this a bit, because you kind of are going against something. Even if you don't, I don't think any of us feel we're going against something. We feel we're going towards something, to be honest. I certainly don't feel any sense of conflict with the system, as it were. It's just not where we are. But within all of this, there is a kind of slight courageous moving away from it and sort of, putting your stake in the ground, as it were, and going, right, I'm not going to follow. I'm not going to look for approval right now. I'm going to follow my children. And that's quite huge for people to actually say, right, particularly after a long time of struggling with school and the systems, to say, right, okay, I'm not actually going to look for approval. I'm not going to try and do it right for everybody else. Now I'm going to look after my children, myself.
It sets
It
you
sets you
up.
off on a journey.
I think it's a big turning point for myself. I think it was, like you said, that stake in the ground, enough. This is enough. I'm not asking for help anymore. I'm not questioning this. Just enough. And for me, I think as a person, it felt I was a mixture of terrified and almost felt the most alive I'd felt in a long time, because it was kind of, I've no idea what I'm doing, but oh wow, that feels really amazing. Because what we'd been doing was hadn't worked, and I think we just got to that point. And my eldest actually asked to come out of school. They had an inset day, and me and him went for a sandwich in a cafe, and he just, very clearly, very, he's a very articulate lad, and he was just like, "Mum, I'm really unhappy. I don't need to be there." And he just put this whole case forward of why he could do this at home, what he thought, and we talked it through. And I just sat there and I looked at him and I just thought, you've been brave enough to say that to me. I have to honor this. I have to. And then that evening, just like, oh my gosh, this is terrifying. And I remember all my friends, family and everyone, this word brave just kept popping up. I think people didn't know what to say. It was quite, and they were like, oh gosh, that's ever so brave. Or wow, you're so brave. And at the time, the word never, I never took it in as brave. My brain was turning it around and going, they mean stupid. They mean you're an idiot. What are you doing? And that's what I was hearing. But now I look back and I think, yeah, actually, it was probably the bravest thing I'd ever done, because it's a massive leap. But I now can see it of like, you can walk through that door, and we all fear walking through because we think what's beyond that door is going to be worse. But actually, we were in the mud.
Yeah, completely.
And actually, but the mud is comfortable, isn't it? So where you are has become comfortable because it's what you know. But actually now I'm just so glad we did. We walked through that door, and the other side, I don't regret anything about it at all.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, your son, how intuitive of him and how understanding of him that he did not need to try harder and look for more approval, but he actually was in the wrong place. It was not an environment in which he could thrive. And I think that, as you were saying before, behavior expresses a need. We need to hear children when they're saying, this isn't right for me, because they're listening to something about themselves that we don't necessarily see or hear, but they're getting it. And as we move through life, it's important that we are aware of how we feel about situations. It keeps us safe. It takes us to jobs that we love. It takes us to relationships that are healthy. If we're saying, well, okay, this is what is expected, so I better buckle down and do my best, even though it feels completely wrong and alien to me, and I cannot be myself here. Because you would use the word authentic, and I think that's a really sort of pertinent word, in that you see your children now, and I see my children as their sort of whole selves. It doesn't seem that there's any bit of that that has been dampened down. There will be, of course, there will be. None of us are perfect. Society is what it is. We're still their parents. I'm sure there's plenty of things that they'll say, well, the great scheme of things, I certainly went through school feeling absolutely less than an authentic version of myself.
Yeah.
And I feel that through my children, I have, by allowing them that space, at some point, you kind of have to step up yourself, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it. I think we've very much been on a family journey. But I think, like I said, they can sniff out a pretend project. They can sniff out, you know, and they call me out on it. And that has been such a gift, actually, because, you know, I might be saying something, my words are coming out my mouth, but my face and my whole body language is saying something completely different. And they will call me out. So, Mum, you know, Mum, you don't really mean that. I do.
That's good. Yeah. It's interesting when they do that, though. And then, so occasionally someone will do that with me. And no, probably more than occasionally, they'll spot a tone or something I've said, and I will deny it and say, no, no, everything's fine or whatever. And then they'll say, no, no, it just isn't. And then I think, oh, actually, yeah, there is an edge. What's the edge? What is it that I can't quite deal with in this situation? Yeah. And it's always about me.
Totally. Totally. They are our mirror, aren't they? For sure. And that can be difficult at times, but I do see it as a huge gift, you know. And now I can, you know, perhaps when I'm quite upset or triggered by something, and the natural reaction is like, oh, I'll be irritated with the child. And actually now I'm like, oh, thank you. That's something I need to work on. You know, thank you for helping me see that and try and see it is a gift that they're showing you where you need to show up a bit more.
Yeah.
And I think I'm really can see how the whole idea of being the role model for your child, I think I never, you know, hear that so many times. And I don't think I ever really understood that. But now I really see how, even as tiny babies, they're observing everything you do. They're watching you. And even down to that, when you're not showing up authentically, so you're saying something, but your body language is saying something else, you know, they're seeing that. You know, why are they doing that? And I think now I've really embodied that, and as has my husband, that whole idea that we are the role models. So we do have to, you know, say the things we're going to do. We have to show up when we're going to show up. And, you know, we can't be saying to them, you know, take opportunities in life and, you know, go out bravely into the world. And, you know, we can't be saying these things to them when we're not doing those ourselves.
I wonder, the word role model, it's interesting, isn't it? I wonder if we've perhaps understood that to be how to show them to, you know, work well within a society. But actually, your, you know, role model really means how to be, what, how to be a good human, how to thrive as yourself. You know, what does it mean, really? It really means probably about, yeah, how to thrive as the person you are, is not the person I am.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's everything. It's how you communicate, how you, I mean, I've only recently learnt about boundaries. Who knew? What are they?
I love the boundaries conversation, because I think it's really interesting about boundaries, because I think that in kind of mainstream parenting talk, setting boundaries is actually about setting rules, but that's not what they really are.
No, and I think that was it. And we, you know, we didn't parent in that way. But now I'm like, no, it's my boundaries of what I deem as acceptable for me. And actually, if I didn't have any, and then it's like, well, I'm then not role modeling that. I want them to be able to know that they can have boundaries for themselves.
Right.
And
yeah.
Compassion was another big one that I wasn't really in my head particularly very nice to myself. So, you know, if I'm berating myself, oh, done that wrong again, you know, and they're hearing that. So it was everything, I think, of you're not just role modeling.
Yeah,
you know, how to go out and get a good job, or, you know, how to work hard. And I think that's probably what I had in my head, whereas now it's everything. You're role modeling everything to them.
Yeah. I had the same response to the word self-compassion as you did to boundaries. Who knew?
Yeah, I Googled it.
And I'd come across mindfulness many years before, and I thought, how have I been practicing this without this piece? And I remember thinking, oh, this is the missing piece here, is me being kind to myself within it all. And so now I've understood that it is everything. And again, I always think it's really interesting to think, you know, when we're in a situation, and it's nice to think, how would I like my child to act when they're my age? Would I like them to be, you know, they've got something wrong. Do I want them to be having a terrible time for 4 days? Or would I like them to be able to just say it's okay and carry on? Can I show them what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's another unraveling of our own stuff, isn't it? Of course, if we've been giving ourselves a hard time for decades.
Yeah.
That's quite a big piece to unravel.
If they don't have to do all the work to unravel that when they're older, I think that'd be amazing. And I can see they've picked up on things already. Yeah, I think they're just quite aware. And I end up apologising a lot, you know, which again, you know, I'd be like, oh, you know, we can't always get it right as parents. We can't always be super, we're not superhuman, you know, but I think it's just modelling how to, apologise. I got that wrong, or, you know, I didn't listen, or, yeah.
I think when you bring your sort of, let's say, most authentic self to the relationship, and you listen and you always doing what you can for that relationship, there's also a level of trust there. So, for example, going back to boundaries, for example, and you have to say no to something because you haven't got the energy or because it just won't work for you, I think then there's an understanding that that no is coming from a place of real thought. It's not just a throwaway no because I say so, or because I can't be bothered, or it's, there's some thought behind it, and there's a trust in the boundaries as well. And I think when, you know, as long as we're always going first to the relationship, then I think those other pieces really slot into place when there's a level of trust and a sense of safety, emotional safety, perhaps that would be, then so much can come from that space, can't it? And then, absolutely. Saying sorry when we think we've got it wrong. Or
I think safety and trust are huge. And I think when we were in the schooling system, I think sometimes you're, as a parent, put in a position where you're having to get your children to do certain things, or, and you might not necessarily agree with them, or, but you're kind of stuck in this position. And I found that really hard because that didn't feel authentic to me. I felt like I was, not what I wanted to do, but you've made a commitment to the school and they want you to do this. So I'm going to help, you know, try and get you to do this.
Yes, that's difficult.
But behind that, I was thinking, but I don't even agree with that.
Right. Yeah, it's complicated that, isn't it? We only had 6 months of a school experience. My middle son, who went to school for 6 months a couple of years ago now. You know, it was an okay experience, and he made some friends, and he found it interesting enough, but then ultimately not how he wanted to learn at all, and quite boring, I think, but they're not his words. I had this awful app that would tell me how he'd done that day, and it would, little points would come up, and then things that were not okay. And I found it very intrusive and very odd to be sort of looking in on him after many years where he's been very trusted to, you know, really decide himself what he's doing and how he's doing it. And I found it very undermining. I wondered how it is to support a child through a system that you don't particularly agree with. And we found our way through it. So if there was homework that was going to be due on Monday, and if he didn't get it in, there'd be a detention, I'd be made aware of that. And I remember thinking, well, I don't really agree with any of that, but it felt like I would just have to say, hey, you know, you're aware of that, right? And he'd go, yeah. And that was enough. Mm-hmm. But it was enough to already feel it seeping into life a little bit. How do I hold these two things? You know, and we made our way through it, no problem really. But I thought, well, this is potentially challenging to the relationship. And the relationship really does need to be sacred, I think.
Yeah, I think the relationship and connection is something that I've really discovered is really a huge value for me. It's really important to me. So I think we put that above everything else, really. And sometimes that does mean that you pull back on other things, and that feeling of going back to what you said earlier, I don't believe you can learn unless you do feel safe. And I think the growth comes where you're able to just push a little bit out of your comfort zone. But you don't have to step so far out of it that it just becomes so terrifying. It's just creeping beyond it. But you know, and I definitely can see that in the boys learning that they have, it's almost like waves where they'll just suddenly be really confident about something and they'll just surge forward in their learning and do this stuff. And then they might creep back a little bit and just go back into the sort of little safe space almost, you know, kind of creep back. And I'm like, look what I've done. But now it's got a little bit scary again. So I'm just going to retreat back, reconsolidate. Right, now I'm ready. Off I go again. Yeah. I can see that with myself. And I think that's a very human thing to do. We can't be constantly out of our comfort zone and surging forward. That's just too much.
Yeah. And also, have you noticed how, so a lot of people will say, my child couldn't possibly do this because they're not self-motivated. And what I've found very interesting is to see how they will push themselves out of their comfort zone because they are motivated to do it, because it's something they want to learn about, it's something they want to experience, because they're curious, because they want to challenge themselves. Yeah. I've never seen them shy back from that. So they do move out, but they go at a pace that feels safe. And every child's pace will be very different. I'm sure your two have got a different pace.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And they have to be interested initially to kind of go out. But once they're on that path, they will, I call them sort of obstacles, but they will fly over some of these obstacles, like even things that I think, oh, that's probably going to be really dull. And my eldest has always had a bit of an entrepreneurial streak, and he's football mad, has been since tiny, and he was selling all his old football kits online, and then once he'd sold all of them, then he would source others. And now he sells a lot of trainers and he sources clothes and things for people, and he does really well out of it, and he's also made his own football mystery box products, and the learning through doing all of that, and there's elements of that that are really interesting and he's really got stuck into, and then there's other bits where he's come to and you can see it's not his natural go-to, like that's really interesting, but he hasn't shied away from it because he knows he wants to do that because he wants to get beyond that to the next bit. It's a component of what he's trying to do, and the learning and the things he's done,
amazing. Yeah,
and he does it all on his own, and then he's very independent, and then he will come back and he'll say, oh, I've tried this, Mum, I've tried this, and I'm still, and he's just really checking in, and my role isn't to fix and say, oh, well, if I was you, I'd do this. I just go, oh, wow, you sound like you tried a lot. And she, did you know any other options? Well, I could try this. Okay, so yeah, no, I will. I'm going to go and try that now. And actually, I find a lot of the time, actually, I don't actually need to say anything. No. They just want to check in with you because they've hit this point where, got a bit tricky, or I'm a bit annoyed, or I thought that's going to be easy and it's not, and you just have to hold them in that, oh, this is annoying, it's frustrated, and then they're off again.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
and you think, oh, I didn't even say anything, did I help?
Well, sometimes it's just that safe space, isn't it, the retiring to it. And I think if we can be a safe space, a non-judgmental safe space, we're already doing a lot. It's funny, as you're talking about him, I'm just thinking about how, mainstream learning, what it totally underestimates or has even forgotten about, dare I say, is intrinsic motivation. And the fact that we are intrinsically motivated to learn, we learn to talk, we learn to walk, we do that because we're always growing, we're always getting interested in new things. And intrinsic motivation is incredibly powerful. And in fact, when you satisfy your own desire for learning, you get a big dopamine hit. You know, the body rewards us with following our own on the path that's right for us, because we feel good when we do it. And interestingly, if you offer an extrinsic reward to someone for something that they are doing because they want to, it will dampen their motivation because there's this taking over of the journey. And again, getting back to that autonomy piece, you get autonomy and motivation together. And that's so powerful.
Yeah, really powerful. And I think it's, as a parent, it's a bit of a dance. I've had to really learn where to get out of the way, where to sort of step in, where to walk alongside, because I learned quite early on, actually, particularly with my younger boy, I've always been quite creative. So I'm always kind of mucking around with things. And really, when he was a toddler, we could never create together. Like, we couldn't do a bit of painting or anything. He would just be, meh, my thing, don't touch it. Don't, like, it was, yeah, he needed to have his own thing. Kind of that dance that if they get excited about something, if you jump on it too quickly, my two will, oh, she's got a bit excited, and they run.
And it's like, funny, bye. Yeah.
And even if in your head you're going, oh, yes, I'm so thrilled that, yes, they're really excited about this, you have to just be like, oh.
Yeah. But it's interesting, that overexcitement, isn't it? Again, and that getting back to the things our children shine the light on for us. What, you know, you got to think, why am I so attached to my child going to Lego Club on a Thursday? What is it that I am so attached to? Yeah. Or them saying they'd like to study biology or whatever it is. Why am I so enthusiastic? Like, there's probably some fear in there, something that you feel it's going to sort it out, you yeah. know? Like,
yeah, and I think there's an element of, perhaps, I know my youngest would probably say, oh, mum, you know, this is my project.
Right.
There's me kind of like, ooh, well, you know, and I want to get involved. And so I've really, yeah, that kind of stepping back. No, yeah. This is his project. He'll ask for help if he wants it.
Yeah, it's funny because mine, I'm going to say two or three of them in particular, well, one in particular, hates any kind of feedback, even a, you know, a little, oh, that looks good. And I can see how it feels to them that it's a judgment. It feels like a judgment. It is entirely foreign to them, this idea of needing encouragement from me, or
validation, I suppose, of
validation, yes, positive feedback, mm-hmm. that whole thing, you know, good job. They really, really dislikes that.
Yeah, my youngest the same.
You know, would definitely celebrate something with them that they really were enjoying, but only if they're really enjoying it.
Absolutely.
I think there's something a little bit arrogant, isn't there, when the adult comes and goes, well, I like that. You know, and if I like it, must be all right then.
Yeah, and I think we're almost assuming what they're thinking or what their plan is, or kind of we're seeing it through our perspective, and it might be completely different for them. I mean, I see that a lot outside of being at home and home educating the boys. I have a project called Cardboard Shed. So when we moved to this property, it had a shed. It's a bit bigger than a shed, but. And I lined the inside with cardboard, and families and children come in and play with cardboard. And I absolutely love it. It helps me with an outlet for my creativity. Mm-hmm. But I really see through that, because the children, the families that come, there's no rules in there. And they walk in and they can play and create in the space however they want to. And because the whole thing is cardboard, they can add to it, they can take away from it. It's so open. And the children never have a problem with that. And they never worry about not having an idea. And whereas these are a lot of the parents that worry about, oh, what if they don't know what to make? It's like, they'll be fine. But I think it's about the children don't need you to, assess or judge or make any comment on what they're doing, really, because you don't know what they've decided they want to get from what they're doing. Does that make sense? So they are literally exploring and working things out and having a go, and they might not have an end result, or there might be no outcome, but whatever it is they're absorbed in, they're getting something from it.
Absolutely.
And I think as adults, we kind of want to put a name onto that or sort of label it in some way.
Yeah. I feel like we always want to nail things down. We're not very good with sitting with not knowing, are we? We sort of want to know what it looks like now, and not seeing outcome or output. Of course you do over time, as you've learned over time, but this huge amount of output. And then when you look at it, you go, oh yeah, now I understand how that was happening. Yeah. Now I see those 6 months where it was almost completely silent and nothing was, I couldn't see anything happening. Oh, but now I see this is the knowledge that I've just had this mind-blowing conversation about geopolitics with someone. What? Where did this come from? Right. So it's there. You have to sit and be able to trust even when you can't see the evidence. And sit with that not knowing. So I think those adults, you know, immediately thinking, okay, but what's the output going to look like here? What's the end result? And we have to get away from that, don't we?
Absolutely, because we don't know what that child needs at that time.
No.
We really don't. And sometimes it looks, from an adult perspective, as nothing.
Right.
Playing, messing around. Well, hang on a minute, you haven't finished that thing. You're starting to make something over there and there's four other things here that you haven't finished. And it's that, well, but they probably have finished because whatever they wanted to get from what they did there, they've got, and so they've dropped it.
But there's another adult thing, not finishing things, right?
Yeah.
How terrible is that? Another thing you can let go of. There are so many of these, aren't there, that we've picked up along the way.
Yeah, and I can really see that now with my youngest is really into, I kind of class it as nature, but there's been these threads all the way along since he came out of school. I think one of the first things, I emailed the school and said, we're not doing all the Zooms. That's not him. He's not interested. And one of the first things, he got some little pot plants that we had in the house and he put them in a cardboard box and he shut the lid and he said, I'm going to leave them. I want to see what happens to them. And I was like, oh, okay. And then, you know, so occasionally peering in after a week, what had happened, you know, and stuff. And then we built a pond that summer. It was all him. And then he was making these different bug houses. Oh. And then he got really into bonsai trees. And we were trying to turn, you know, oak saplings and all sorts of things that grandma gave us. And could we bonsai them? And they all died. But there were so many different things. And at the time, I kept thinking, oh, what are we doing now? Now we're doing this. You know, and I was trying to bring in, he was really into bees at the time. Mm-hmm. So I printed off a worksheet, let's learn the parts of the bee. You know, he was like, no, I'm not interested in that. And it wasn't till I really kind of looked back that I could see this thread that was running through everything he did. You know, it wasn't just bees. It wasn't just let's make a pond.
No.
Let's see what that plant is. It is the world and nature and how is everything else affecting everything else.
Gosh, we're all so different, aren't we? You know, you're describing your son there and my three, all like entirely different things again. And your elder son, no doubt, they're also, we're all pulled towards such different things. And there's a richness in that.
Yeah, so different. And the joy is that you can then go down these deep dives into things, because actually it's, you know, we're into GCSEs now. My eldest has decided to do those. And I can see how narrow they are. And that's really changed the dynamics of things in the family, I think. And they're really quite dull.
Yeah.
And I can see how we've had these years of being able to really deep dive into stuff. And I do that. I can see how that's how I learn. I get fascinated by something and I want to know more about it. And I'm off down that path. And then I'm like, okay, done, drop that. And then I'm off over here.
The GCSE, though, I think the main, completely the opposite, isn't it? It's not a journey of discovery. It's learning this amount.
No.
Everything you're describing about your children, there's this journey that they're picking, and at every turn they decide which way they'll go according to how they're feeling. It couldn't be more different, could it, than a set curriculum. It just couldn't look more different.
My eldest, as always, he's quite articulate, like he loves a good chat. We're quite a chatty family, so a lot of our learning is conversations and discussions and debate. And he's always, again, a bit of a thread I've seen through, fascinated by people and just why we think the way we do. And he'd often say, you know, just ask lots of questions like, oh, why do you think that person did that, Mum? Or, yeah, just very observant around kind of people. And he was doing loads of learning around that linked with the sport and would be, you know, spending his pocket money or gift vouchers on sports psychology and all sorts of things. And he was really deep diving into stuff. And then he decided he wanted to do GCSEs. He did too early. He did sociology and psychology, thinking, well, psychology, that quite links. And I thought, oh, that's going to be a great fit for him. And he passed the GCSEs and it was great. But he came out the other end and he was like, oh, thank God that's over. Like, that was really dull. And I just thought to myself, what a shame, because actually here was a child who was quite fascinated really by how people think and just people in general. And actually almost the GCSE kind of took that away.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
Obviously, I'm sure, you know, maybe it will resurface again, but I can feel he's kind of pulled back away from it, of just like, no, let's...
Yeah.
Just took a lot of the joy away from it. And I can really see now the difference between my eldest, who's now doing some more GCSEs that he'll sit in the summer, and my youngest, who is deep diving into all these things.
Yeah.
It's quite a stark contrast into how they're learning at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah, so my middle son is doing some GCSEs this summer as well, and he's finding it a little bit deadly. But my older son, who's now at the local college, and he's interesting because I've noticed whenever he has something he needs to do, some kind of homework, that kind of thing, he's really happy to engage in it. But sometimes he'll have to find a really deeper meaning to it. Mm-hmm. It has to be meaningful. If it feels just like something to tick a box on, then he finds it really difficult to engage with it. Now, for example, they're doing a play. That's a sort of Greek tragedy. So now he's sort of he's reading a lot about ancient Greece and he's learning the alphabet, and he's brought in all these things just to make sure it really feels alive for him. You know, like, because the idea of wasting time is terrible to him. He doesn't want to waste time on learning something that has no value. It has to be really valuable. So sometimes he'll make everything 10 times harder. I'll say, but how long is that going to take you to do this? Oh, it'll probably take me about a whole weekend. And it's maybe something that you could sort of knock off in a couple of hours. But he just, to him, that would just be a waste of time. And again, he's very autonomy, sort of, you know, he really has to do it in his own way. If it has no value, no intrinsic meaning to it, it makes it dull.
Mm.
But it would for me too, wouldn't it, for you? I mean, if you pick any subject that you don't like.
Yeah, for me, absolutely. I was just thinking as you were talking, I was just thinking back to school, and I hadn't really thought about it, but perhaps a bit later on, it would be a project or an essay or something, and I would do the writing part, but then I would spend all my time presenting it in some sort of way. Oh. So, you know, if it had, it would probably be illustrated and folded up in some beautiful, almost like book format. I remember one time, I think it was a whole project essay, and I converted the whole thing into this sort of scroll that you had to unwind, and then it was in this presentation box, and I'd spent ages, but to me that was probably the bit.
Right.
It's like, yeah, get the essay done, get the writing done, like, done, but now I'm going to
lovely,
you know, do this bit. So it's sort of almost like what you were saying about your son, because it's almost like, okay, if you're going to make me do this, I want to get something from this, so I'm going to put my bit in that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're running out of time now. Gosh, we could talk for so much longer. I guess I'm interested in knowing, like, how you feel like it's affected your life as well in school, because we've talked to you, we sort of touched upon that a little bit. But are there any ways that you, just the way that you live, the way you see your life?
I mean, it's had a huge effect on my life. Really, really positive. I do feel braver. I feel like I've connected with my intuition more. Like my intuition is quite strong now. I feel that stake in the ground of, you know, this is enough, and really kind of taking back ownership of my family. But also I feel we've really slowed down. Like life has just really slowed because we've wanted it to. And I think that's allowed us just to be a lot more present, a lot more consciously aware. And I realize how much of my life before was just busy, busy, busy. But we weren't happy. And now I feel like we do less. We get a lot more done, which seems bizarre. It's that kind of, you know, busy doesn't always equal thriving in a way. It doesn't. And so, yeah, the sort of slowing down, being much more intentional. Yeah, and just connecting with each other is the most important thing, so that you all feel safe, and then from that place you can all, you know, venture out when you want to, but you're all connected back together.
That's lovely, thank you, Claire. And finally, any words of advice for anybody who might be in a similar position that you were?
I think listen to your children and trust yourself. Like, it is a really scary place to be, but I think we are so much more capable than we give ourselves credit for. And, you know, at the time, taking the boys out of school did feel like a really brave thing to do, but I have no regrets. And I think you just have to walk through that door.
Right. Lovely. Thank you so much, Claire.
You're welcome.
It's been absolutely lovely chatting with you. Yeah. And much love to you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye.